Into sports.
20 yards out, Hurst to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
And get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him. Yeah, no.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
The Football Show.
With Paddy Power. Fueling the mischief in the beautiful game.
Gamble responsibly. See Dunlewy.net.
I'm prepared to do anything I can to play for the country again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
You are very welcome along to this week's edition of the Paddy Power Half Hour. Coming up over the next 30 minutes or so, we'll be looking at Dundalk progressing in Europe. They are now just 90 minutes away from potentially getting back into the group stages of the Europa League. It's a packed weekend of Premier League football. The highlight on Monday evening when Liverpool, the defending champions, go up against the FA Cup winners Arsenal. But plenty of other interesting games this weekend, including two live matches on Off the Ball this coming Sunday. Spurs against Newcastle, with Brian Kerr and Nathan Murphy, while Dave McIntyre will be on commentary with Kenny Cunningham for the meeting of Man City and Leicester, both those games live on Off the Ball. This afternoon, we are joined by host of Team 33 here on Off the Ball, Enda Call, who's back at Off the Ball Towers. Enda, good afternoon to you.
Well, what's the crack?
Might start with Dundalk, Enda, because tremendous win against Sheriff last evening in Moldova, coming through in the end 5-3 on penalties after it was 1-1. When you consider where Dundalk were a month ago, they've now won three games in a row in all competitions going into last night, win on penalties, and they've got one on the face of it against the Faroe Islands champions next week at the Aviva, a very winnable game to get to the group stages of the Europa.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, like the turnaround. The last couple of months have been pretty insane in terms of League of Ireland standards, and we all know that League of Ireland can be insane on the best of years, so the last couple of months have been pretty weird. For Dundalk, it's an unbelievable chance to get into Europa League. They're not going to get a better opportunity than this. I don't know how many people actually got to watch the game because it was on a stream. The stream itself was actually quite poor, but then somebody stumbled across a stream on YouTube that was just top quality. So I didn't get to watch the full game. I watched the full extra time, last 10 minutes of the ordinary time, and the penalty shootout as well. So It's weird watching a penalty shootout with no fans in the stadium. It's a lot more tense. You can really feel what the players are going through. But what that penalty means for Dundalk on a monetary value is phenomenal. Not only because of going through to the next round. If they get into the Europa League, that's 2 million, which would have been massive money in the best of times. But going into COVID times where there's so much worry about whether or not there's going to be fans back in the stadiums. Every team in the League of Ireland is going to be struggling next year badly when it comes to money. So if they get into the Europa League, not only on a football, from a football point of view, is this a massive result, but from a monetary value and even just for the future of Dundalk Football Club, that money is going to be massive.
Were they to progress next weekend, and that money obviously being incredibly important, does it save their season? Because we accept at this point, I think, the Shamrock Rovers are going to be the champions of the League of Ireland, and Dundalk have already surrendered their title with a few games left. But it becomes a very good season if they qualify for Europe proper.
Yeah, it absolutely does. I mean, Dundalk haven't really been at the races this year, and they're slightly unlucky in the fact that they didn't have as much time to catch Shamrock Rovers as they did last year. There's a similar enough situation to last year, but I'm not saying Shamrock Rovers aren't deserving winners of the League of Ireland. They haven't won it yet, but they're going to win it. But yeah, definitely. Like, I mean, it's not every day that an Irish team gets as far as Dundalk have, and if they get into the Europa League group stages, that is where you want to progress. That's where you improve. And when you're looking at the League of Ireland from a standing point of the stronger team, Shamrock Rovers, Dundalk, Cork City, before they just capitulated over the last couple of years, you're not really competing with sides that are at a level where you're going to progress any further in the League of Ireland. But when you're playing European football, that's where the Patrick McElhinney's, the Michael Duffy's, all these players, that's where they want to play, because that's where you'll see them progressing as footballers. and breaking through the ceiling of the League of Ireland standard. So I think from a football standpoint, that would absolutely save Dundalk's season, regardless of how they get on in the Europa League if they get there, because just getting there is an achievement on its own. When you look at the standards of the teams that are already in the Europa League, Arsenal are there, Roma are there, and it's just massive, massive fixtures that could potentially come down the line. The biggest disappointment would be that the likelihood is it might be all behind closed doors if they do make it there.
Yeah, it's a pity. Again, a bit like we talked about Shamrock Rovers, these opportunities come around like playing Milan, and it's a pity your stadium can't be packed and potentially to make the big money that would be there if stadiums did have fans in attendance. But it looks increasingly like games, at least for the early stages of the Europa and Champions League, will be behind closed doors. Enda, when we talk about what's happening around Dundalk, if people want to have a watch back and get the inside story on this, Shane Keegan, first team coach with Dundalk, was on OTBM this morning. You can catch that on the podcast if you want to listen to it, or it's on YouTube. The interview in full if you want to watch back on the video. Next week they go up against, I mentioned, the champions of the Faroe Islands. I'm probably going to butcher the pronunciation here, but Klavsvik seems to be how it was pronounced when they were talking to Brian Kerr on the TV last night. It's a golden opportunity, you would imagine. This is the benefit of a good coefficient for Dundalk too, that they've come through on the right side of it here. They don't have to play a lot of the difficult teams because they're coming in as champions from the Champions League. Mm-hmm. And it poses, as a result, a golden opportunity to qualify.
Well, it's absolutely massive, and Shane Keegan was on with OTBAM, and I'm not just saying this because Shane Keegan is a regular on off the ball, but from listening to him and the value that he brings to football and Irish football, his journey towards this point in his career with Dundalk is phenomenal as well. If you look at, he was the Galway manager, no longer the Galway manager. He was sort of in a bit of a lull when it came to his managerial career, and then he just so happened to find himself in this job, and now he could be one of the opposition analysts for a team that's playing the Europa League. So for Shane Keegan himself, it's a massive opportunity. I know he was on and he kind of brushed on the topic of maybe having the Shamrock Rovers game this Sunday postponed, and a lot of the reaction to that has been from Shamrock Rovers fans who are out of Europe, and they're saying that, you know, Dundalk should just suck it up and play this fixture. But you have to look at the broader picture here. This isn't just a situation where this fixture could benefit. If Dundalk get the Europa League, that just benefits Dundalk. Absolutely, Dundalk are the first and foremost beneficiaries of this, but it's good for Irish football overall, and Shamrock Rovers especially, if Dundalk do progress into the Europa League, because it increases the coefficient, the point system of Irish football rises in UEFA's standpoint, and it becomes easier for teams to progress to Europe. And that is good for Irish football, regardless of what your standpoint, regardless of what club you support. If Shamrock Rovers postpone this game and Dundalk get to the Europa League, that's going to benefit Shamrock Rovers overall in the next couple of years. So I don't know why they would be so against postponing that fixture.
Yeah, Shane Keegan had a very strange managerial career earlier this season. He was managing at the same time Portlaoise AFC in the Leinster League, close to his home. He was also managing the Clare team in the interleague competition, and also the opposition analyst for Dundalk. So a hard worker and a guy who certainly wraps up plenty of miles. The big game in the Premier League this weekend, and before we have a chat with Jason about the odds for this weekend, is really the game on Monday. Liverpool against Arsenal. Arsenal FA Cup winners last season have made a decent start. Okay, they were workmanlike against West Ham, but they've started the season well. They've got Aubameyang tied down to that new contract. The first big test for them is this trip to Anfield on Monday.
Yeah, definitely. And I suppose when we're looking at putting together the off-the-ball shows and the football show especially, Arsenal were quite a good storyline over the last couple of years because they were such a mess, and it was just trying to get to the bottom of what's going wrong with Arsenal. And this year, it's actually quite the opposite because everyone is so aware of what's going right. They're starting to get things together in the background, in the board level, in the director of football level, and Arteta seems to have come in and really gelled that club together. Aubameyang signing on is massive for that club. He's going to be probably finish his career with that club and be one of their best ever players. So I think that is a key point for Arsenal going forward. They did beat Liverpool already this season, the Community Shield. I do think you're going to see a better Liverpool and a fitter Liverpool than that. But it's going to be interesting for this fixture if Kieran Tierney's fit, because he had to pull out of the game last week with an injury after the warm-up. He has been training with them this week, so he's expected to play. But one of the key points that Arsenal had in that game, and one of the ways that teams have done damage to Liverpool, is getting balls over the top of Trent Alexander-Arnold. That's what Arsenal did against them in the Community Shield. Every opportunity, they got it to Tierney. He had it long over the top to Aubameyang over Trent's head. So an interesting point in this fixture. We'll see with the teams tomorrow. But I'm interested to see who plays the right side of Van Dijk in defence, because I know Fabinho played there when Thiago came on as a sub. Will Fabinho start there this week, or will it be Joe Gomez? That's going to be a very important part in this game, because if Trent doesn't have that cover there, then teams are going to have already sussed out that they can do damage to Liverpool down that side.
Well, sticking with Liverpool, and John Giles was saying off the ball last night about Fabinho's potential to stick at centre-back, and maybe it's a way to work Thiago into the team. We've got Jason Murphy from Paddy Power with us as well. Jason, how are you this afternoon?
Yeah, very good, Will. Thanks.
Just to ask you about Thiago, has this signing, because you know, Liverpool, we were thinking last week, were maybe a little bit short in terms of options, particularly in midfield, and maybe were a little bit short in cover for their front three. They went out and did big business last Friday and into Saturday by getting Jota in, and particularly getting Thiago in from Bayern Munich. When we spoke 2 weeks ago, you were saying Man City favourites for the title. Does the signing of Thiago and potentially the effect he can have on their midfield, has that brought in Liverpool's price to win the Premier League a little bit?
The price has shortened a bit. It's Man City 5-6, Liverpool 11-8 at the moment for the title. It's partly off the back of the results, Liverpool winning their two opening games and a good win away at Stamford Bridge. Thiago overall does improve Liverpool over the course of the season and the options that he gives, particularly with Fabinho being able to move into centre-back. Matip hasn't let Liverpool down when he's played, but the problem is he's been injured too much. And Joe Gomez has done a job there, but I think Fabinho, if Klopp was picking his best 11 for a game, Fabinho centre-back with Thiago starting in midfield would be the way that he would go. Thiago is world-class. If you were picking a world best 11 in last season, Thiago gets into the team. But just what do we expect to see from him in a Liverpool jersey? So at Bayern Munich, he played in a 4-2-3-1. So he was in a double pivot, usually with Kimmich. And the best thing he does is the tempo of the game, the number of passes that he makes. Last season, he averaged 91 passes per 90 minutes in the Bayern Munich team. He didn't register an assist, but what he does is he'll take only one or two touches and he'll move that ball on. So say you have 10 passes before a goal, he's probably pass number two and pass number six. He'll be the pass before the pass. But that's really the big benefit he'll bring to this Liverpool team, especially when they're up against teams that are in a low block and they're hard to break down. He does his defensive work as well. He's the second most interceptions for Bayern Munich last season, second most tackles just behind Alphonso Davies, who, you know, making the last ditch tackles to cover in behind. So Thiago, he brings a lot to that Liverpool midfield, and he was one of the, probably the only available player that you could put straight into that Liverpool 11 that they could buy this summer and instantly improved them. Really good market that we offer is the player of the year, PFA player of the year. De Bruyne heads that market at 7-2 at the moment. We've Thiago in at 10-1. You've Salah, Fernandez 11-1, Sterling 12-1, and Mane 14-1. It's a really interesting market. The reason we have De Bruyne short is he's world class, De Bruyne. Don't get me wrong. There's only two players though that have ever won back to back player of the years. That was Henry and Ronaldo. But we do think De Bruyne has the potential to win a back-to-back if he continues the brilliance that he has. But with this particular market, it's normally the narrative at the time of the vote that dictates it. Kante, when he won it at Chelsea, there was a lot of media hype around the great work he did around the pitch, and he got it. David Ginola won it back when United won the treble purely because he scored a couple of eye-catching goals at the right time. And there's only been one player that's come in his debut season and actually won it. So that's why we think it'll be difficult for Thiago to do it. I don't know if you want to hazard a guess at who that player might have been.
I
looked it up, obviously. Van Nistelrooy, when he came to United, he had 23 league goals and 10 goals in the Champions League. So he was scoring goals, which catches the eye, whereas, like I've outlined, Thiago, it's the subtle stuff that you might necessarily pick up, or it won't be the eye-catching stuff in the highlight reels. So he improves Liverpool immensely. Fantastic signing. Jota as well, especially if Liverpool are a goal ahead in the game with 20 minutes to go. Jota is a perfect player to play on the break and catch teams coming onto Liverpool. So really good business for Liverpool overall. And yes, they're stronger than last season, but we still just have Man City ahead in the betting at the moment.
Okay, a lot of people were concerned, Jason, about the way Manchester United played last weekend in their first game back. And I know Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was saying on the TV on a match of the day afterwards that, look, it's understandable. We've had a long break. We had a long season last year. We're not quite up to speed yet for the start of the campaign. So improvement is there within the team. But it puts that concern back about Solskjaer teams being a bit streaky in terms of their form. How are you calling it about whether Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is still going to be there at the end of the season?
Yeah, I'm a United fan. I was very concerned last week, and I've been concerned since Ole got the job. We had a discussion in the office this week about it, and we have put on site 7-2 for him to be gone as United manager before the end of the Premier League season. Some lads are saying it should have been 7-4. Others were saying 8-1, 9-1. So it's a really good discussion point. The reason why I'd be on the shorter side of that, and I think the 7-2 is a bet, is if you look how he got the job, it was off the back of a run of about 14 great games, but United's performances didn't match the results. They won away to Leicester and Tottenham in that first initial run that he had. And then the worst thing I think happened to United was getting that penalty away to PSG, because it meant they were in a position where they had to give him the job and run a hiding to nothing against Barcelona in the next round. Whereas if they had gone out there, he had failed to get top four that season, you could have got Pochettino in that summer and we'd be in a much better position. At the start of last season, I think United only had 9 points after 8 games. And then he goes on another run after Christmas. But in that run again, you're beating the likes of Derby, Tranmere, Bruges twice, LA, Lask in the Europa League. And it makes the run look better. But in the big games against Chelsea, Sevilla in the semi-finals, didn't deliver. And in that run post-lockdown around the start of July, United went away to Crystal Palace and Rashford scores just before half-time, but Palace probably should have had a penalty before that game. Then they draw 2-2 with Southampton, a late goal, and then away to Aston Villa, they're struggling and they get a dodgy penalty, a really soft penalty, and they actually win that game. So they happen to get enough points together to get top four in the end and keep him in the job. Whereas if lockdown doesn't happen, Leicester finish top four, United don't get Pogba, don't get Rashford back from injury. So he's had a lot of luck in two big runs. That means that we still have him as in the job. But I don't see the playing style. When you look at Klopp, when you look at Guardiola, you look at Arteta, you know what they're setting out to do, especially in attack. Whereas if United score, it's almost by accident rather than design and just purely from the quality of players that they have. Love Solskjaer as a player, obviously as a United fan, but I just don't see United closing the gap while he's manager. And obviously the board and United possibly not having the money to sign the players that they need is another factor as well, which means that United won't close the gap this season and won't until the change manager and get another couple of players in.
Yeah, the other bet I just want to ask you about is a bit of a novelty one, given that Nelson Semedo has now signed for Wolves. Yeah. They're almost at a point where they can have an entirely Portuguese 11. They've got a Portuguese away kit. What's the chances that we see 8 or more of these Portuguese players on the pitch for Wolves at the same time?
Yeah, we love pricing up these things. And if you go to our Premier League outrights, we have a lot of what odds Paddy's markets in there with these kind of quirky bets in them. And we decided to go with the 8 players or more because looking at the squad that they had and the players that can play in different positions, we've gone with it to be a 3-1 shot. We reckon most weeks they're going to start with 6 or 7. And then if Jimenez is rested, et cetera, et cetera, it's possible that they will start with 8 or more in a Premier League game. Really, since they were taken over in the Championship, you'd have to trust the transfer business that they did. Like, they brought Ruben Neves into the Championship. He was the best player in the Championship by a country mile. When they got promoted, they brought in Rui Patricio, João Moutinho. You know, they were never in doubt in being relegated in their first Premier League season back. Whereas this transfer business that they've done now, they've essentially swapped Doherty for Semedo. Semedo has been at Barcelona the last 3 years and hasn't made right back position his own. He was kind of in and out of the team swapping with Sergio Roberto. So we'll have to wait to see if that signing is a good one. The other thing that they kind of done is Jota's gone to Liverpool for good money and they brought in Fabio Silva. If you listen to Wolves speak, they're really, really sweet on him. They've been following him since he's 16 and they maintain in the years since then, in his age group, he's the best in that bracket across Europe. He has all the skills and attributes that you want from a striker. So they're expecting big, big things from him. But it's an interesting novelty bet. If you want to have a look, you can go and check it on site. For this weekend as well, with the Premier League spread out, we've a couple of really great offers this weekend. So if you're doing your ACCA, we have ACCA insurance. So if you back 4 teams or more in your ACCA and one of them lets you down, you'll get your money back as a free bet up to a max of €10 each day. So if you're doing your ACCAs, that's definitely worth having a look. Or if you're listening on Off the Ball to the Spurs game on Sunday, we do power prices every day. There's a really good power price of Son and Kane to have 2 shots or more against Newcastle in the 90 minutes, it's from 2-1 increased to 6-1. If you look at Spurs against Newcastle last season, Newcastle won the game. Joe Linton scored a goal on the break, and it was probably his highlight of his Newcastle career until he got two against Morecambe during the week. But Spurs battered them in that game. They had 16 shots, should have won the game. And the way Kane and Son have started the season, and with Newcastle likely to just set up and invite Spurs onto them this weekend, I think that's a really, really good offer as well to have a look at. But it's a fantastic weekend of football ahead, and we're going to finish with hopefully what will be a cracking game between Liverpool and Arsenal on Monday night.
Good stuff. Jason, thanks a million for joining us. You can check out those novelty bets as well. That's an interesting one, particularly with Wolves potentially having 8 Portuguese players on the pitch. End of call. Time for you to give your calls on what's going to happen this weekend. We'll start maybe with Manchester United tomorrow, because, you know, as Jason mentioned, not a good performance against Crystal Palace last Saturday evening, and now they go to Brighton tomorrow. You would imagine this is a good chance for United to get up and running with some points in the Premier League, though.
You'd think that, but they actually struggled against Brighton last year, and they just looked tired. They didn't play well against Crystal Palace at all, but I know Lindelof got a lot of stick for that, and rightly so, because he's been awful for the last couple of years for United. But the issue for United was that they didn't have enough energy, they didn't run hard enough, they didn't press hard enough, and Crystal Palace punished them, and that's how it's going to happen if they keep continuing the way they are. Against Brighton look a lot better than they were last year in terms of creating chances. I know last year they struggled a little bit to actually break teams down, but if they get United are a team that any team in this Premier League can break down, and it's a sign of the times where I looked at that fixture and it's just not a guarantee for United anymore to go and win this game. So Donny van de Beek came into the team midweek. He started the game. He came on as a sub against Crystal Palace, scored a goal as well. He looks like a really good signing, but it's just how do United get him into the team with Fernandes and Pogba as well? They just look a little bit lax, but they need a couple of signings. It's got to the point now where it's beyond sort of Twitter outrage. Like, United started with a right-hand side of who started right back for United at the weekend? Actually, was it Fosu Mensah started right back?
Yeah,
Fosu Mensah is the right back. Scott McTominay is the right-hand side midfielder, and then James as the right winger. That's not a Premier League top four right-hand side. That is a mid-table Premier League right-hand side. It's just not good enough at this stage.
Yeah, we were talking about this with Daniel Harris a few weeks ago when he was picking his Manchester United depth chart for the season. And I said to him at the time, I think whenever Wan-Bissaka is missing, they lose an awful lot on that right-hand side. It's a massive drop-down in standard. Now, he was saying there's some youth players who are coming through who are very promising to play at right-back, and maybe that explains why United haven't been looking to sign cover. But I find when he's not there, United's threat down the right-hand side diminishes massively.
Yeah, and it comes slightly from the fact that if United don't have someone on that right-hand side and in the likes of, from a defensive standpoint, first of all, Wan-Bissaka is that cover. And when Lindelof is playing on the right-hand side, he's extremely weak, so he gets bullied on the ball. He's not fast, so he can't really catch players like Zaha, who gets in behind. And he lacks a little bit of concentration. So if you don't have a strong player beside him, that's where you're going to do damage to United. And also, I just don't think that when you go beyond the Wan-Bissaka at right back, going forward, it doesn't have enough either, because Scott McTominay labours on the ball a little bit too much. And then James was brought as a sub. He's not a starting player for this standard of football. So it's an extremely weak side of United at the minute. And the problems obviously go beyond that right-hand side, but that is where they're weakest at this point in time. And that's where, when I saw the Crystal Palace team, if I was on the Crystal Palace starting 11, I would have been licking my lips looking at the United right-hand side. Rather, going down that side, you had Lindelof and Fosu Mensah marking one of the most dangerous forwards in the Premier League. And if you look at the teams that are going to do damage to United, it's the teams that can get in behind them. And that's pretty much every team in the top half right now.
Yeah, maybe Aaron Connolly would be licking his lips at that potential tomorrow lunchtime. Chelsea, and are they going to start Edward Mendy from the very start tomorrow? Because I would be thinking that he is going to play against West Brom, because Frank Lampard mentioned in his press conference earlier in the week, before they were playing in the EFL Cup, that they needed to get Mendy registered and for his tests and everything to be gone through by Thursday. That was the case. So he is eligible to play. And you would imagine this is a perfect game to ease him in if he's going to be your potential first-choice goalkeeper.
Yeah, I don't see it as a situation like the Dean Henderson-David Gea conversation where like David Hay is clearly a world-class goalkeeper who's just short on confidence at this point in time, whereas Kepa just hasn't improved over the last couple of years. He has one of the worst save records, I think, in Europe altogether. He is one of the worst save percentages as a goalkeeper. And it, whether it's short in confidence or whether he's just not good enough for that standard, I mean, Frank Lampard said last week that, you know, they trust Kepa, that they want to keep him in the team, that they want to get his confidence back up, and then they go and sign another keeper as his replacement. So I think that's the sign of the times of where Frank Lampard's patience is with Kepa at the minute, because he's already made two errors leading to goals this season. They've only had two games, so that's two goals he's already caused them. That's more than any other player in the league combined all throughout the Premier League. He's made more mistakes. So I think he's straight out of the team, try to get his confidence back somehow, and he'll be a decent substitute keeper for Mendy.
Yeah, I did wonder as well, end of last weekend, whether it accelerated the talks with Ren to finally come up with a transfer fee, €25 million in the end. But, you know, Kepa again had a poor game against Liverpool. And at that point, I just wonder, because it was Monday morning, I think, when the clubs found the agreement, whether at that point Frank Lampard went to Abramovich and those who do the transfers in Chelsea and just said, let's just get this done now.
Yeah, well, he's great pals with Abramovich, Frank Lampard, and he was friends with him when he was a player as well. So that's definitely worked in his favour when it came to this transfer window. Chelsea have, is it now, that's seven players that could potentially start in their team that weren't in the squad last year. I know only two of them.
Seven first-teamers have been signed. Nearly $300 million spent now, too.
Yeah, so, I mean, they have quite a good net spend over the last couple of years. So the fact that they actually took a year off the transfer is working in their favour overall. But, it's about these players gelling. Didn't really work against Chelsea. I know Kai Havertz got a hat-trick during the midweek game. So it's just about getting these players into the positions where they're going to be. Werner has seemed to take off with the ground running, so that's a bonus. Kai Havertz was a little bit poor in his first couple of games for Chelsea, so he'll grow into the team as well. So it's just about getting these players into the right positions. It's hard to know. It's still impossible to tell where Chelsea are going to play them. Like, does N'Golo Kante drop out of the team altogether? Does he play in a defensive role again? Frank Lampard doesn't seem to want to play him as the CDM in this team. So I don't really understand that. It's something that has baffled since Sarri moved Kante out of that position, why Kante hasn't been playing in the role that he won two Premier League titles in a row for.
Well, it's a case of trying to work out where the new toys are going to fit in. Let's have a look at Sunday's games then, and because, as I mentioned, we've got two games live and off the ball this coming Sunday. You can listen to them online or on News Talk. Nathan Murphy, Brian Kerr are going to be at Spurs against Newcastle. Newcastle have made kind of an indifferent start. You know, good first day away from home against West Ham. Then they lose last weekend when they get back at home. But Spurs, as mentioned by Jason, kind of had a couple of frustrating games against Newcastle last year. But at least up front, Spurs seem to have clicked in the last week or so. And last week they were scoring for fun.
Yeah, and it's just been a crazy couple of weeks of Premier League in terms of goals. Still hard to know where Spurs are at, though. Sometimes they blow hot and cold. Son is phenomenal up front, and if Harry Kane and Son, I think they've combined for more goals than anybody else in the Premier League over the last 3 to 4 years. So if they can get that partnership clicking again this year, then they're going to score goals, and it'll be really interesting to see what happens when you add Bale to that mix and how they get on, if he's playing on the right-hand side or if Son is moved to the right for Bale onto the left. So that's going to be interesting. I want to see Matt Doherty get into the game a bit more. He is hindered by that back four a little bit. So I want to see him getting onto the ball, getting forward. There's been a couple of occasions now in the first game that he played and in the last game that he's done that run into the box where he, instead of going on the overlap, he goes on the underlap, and the Spurs players just haven't been able to pick him out. So once they get used to him getting forward like that, hopefully that'll start to click for Matt Doherty. As for Newcastle, they had a midweek game and they played their strongest team. So it'll be interesting to see if they're tired, because I know Spurs had their game against Leighton Orient called off. So Newcastle were really poor last week, and they weren't great last year either. So they bought a lot of players. They need to improve fast, because they need to stay in the Premier League again this year, because they've spent a lot of money again.
Yeah, a lot of question marks over what's going to happen with that EFL Cup tie. It was probably a blessing in surprise for Spurs in a way, because they were able to play their Europa League game with a bit of extra rest and maybe use some more of the first team players. But they've got Europa League coming up next week. So trying to actually refix that game against Leighton Orient is going to be very tricky with the way the fixtures are falling and an international window coming up. The other live game that we've got on Sunday, and in theory, this is Man City's first proper test of the new season when they take on Leicester City. But are Leicester going to pose problems for Man City at the Etihad on Sunday?
I think they should. They definitely have the potential going forward. Defensively is where you worry about Leicester. They still have quite a few injuries. Castagne made his debut, scored in his debut, and he looks like a pretty good option for them at right back or right wing back, wherever he's going to play for them going forward. But Man City, in their first fixture on Monday night, they were excellent in the first half. Kevin De Bruyne, again, looked to be just the star player that he is. But again, it's the exact same issues that City have had over the last year or so. When Laporte is not playing, they look really bad defensively. And John Stones started in the defence with Nathan Ake. And I saw Micah Richards talking after the game and saying that John Stones was growing into the game in confidence and in concentration. But from my perspective, it looked like John Stones was absolutely falling out of the game and his confidence was falling all over the place, because in the second half, Wolves tore them apart. And if you can get balls over the top, that's where you're doing damage to Man City if John Stones is playing there. Be interested to see what Man City go for as that partnership in centre-back if Laporte's not playing. But again, Jamie Vardy, get the ball over the top to him and you're definitely doing damage to Man City, because if John Stones is starting, he does not have the defensive positioning to handle the likes of Jamie Vardy, whose movement is excellent.
And just before we finish, we talked about in a bit more detail at the start, but game of the weekend is Liverpool against Arsenal, Monday night at Anfield, 8 o'clock. Give me a prediction. How is this going to go? Are Liverpool going to march on and continue their very impressive start to the campaign, or can Arsenal beat them for the second time in a row?
I said there was going to be goals in the Chelsea-Liverpool game. I thought both teams were going to score, and Liverpool were quite good defensively and held out strong. It did help that Chelsea got Christensen sent off. But I do think Arsenal will score against Liverpool, because they posed them a lot of issues in the Community Shield. Again, I want to stress that was a completely different Liverpool side that you're going to see in this game. But down that right-hand flank where Trent is getting forward and his positioning is not great, I do want to reserve a little bit of judgment to see who's going to play at the right-hand side of centre-back, whether it's going to be Fabinho and Thiago then in midfield. I think that's the best option for them at the minute, because Fabinho is strong on the right-hand side, played a little bit at right-back for Monaco, but he's just got a little bit better defensive awareness than Joe Gomez does. So, and Thiago then can control the pace of the game, and Liverpool can control the game that way and stop Arsenal getting through. If you have the ball, then Arsenal aren't obviously going to be attacking them. But I do think Arsenal will score. I do think Liverpool will be better than them overall on the pitch and probably put up maybe 2 to 3 goals against them.
Okay, well, Enda's going to be back with Team 33 tonight from 9 p.m. I think they're talking about football cult heroes and particularly about Eric Cantona on this evening's show. The two live games, just to remind you again, on Off the Ball on News Talk this coming Sunday. You've got Spurs against Newcastle, Nathan Murphy and Brian Kerr. Man City against Leicester. We'll see Kenny Cunningham join Dave McIntyre on commentary. If you want to get more fallout from Dundalk from last night, check out our website. That's otbsports.com. And if you want to listen back to the Paddy Power Half Hour, you can do so wherever you get your podcasts from or on the OTB Sports Podcast Network. We'll speak to you next Friday afternoon.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See dunluey.net.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.